You know, the Bible is full of different characters. Some of them we know well, some of them not so well. And the Bible is an amazing book written by 40 different authors over a period of 1,500 or more years or so. And so it's an amazing book. And as you might guess, God took carefully choosing those that he wanted to write his great book, the greatest book ever written, the most selling book in the world, actually. So what I would like to do today is talk about some of those characters that wrote this magnificent book. I want to point out three different characters. And one of them you know quite well, but I think I can give you some background about him that you may not know. The second person I want to highlight, he's in the Bible, you've heard of him, but you don't know much about him. But he is an amazing person, too. The third person, I doubt that you've ever heard of him, because his name is not written in the Bible, but some of his words are there. So the title of my message is Three Biblical Characters That We Need to Know More About. Three Bible characters we need to know more about. The first one is the Apostle Paul, and of course, you say, the Apostle Paul, I know all there is to know about the Apostle Paul. Well, maybe you do. And the Apostle Paul was an amazing man. He was, and the more you learn about him, the more amazing he becomes. So I guess I want you to turn to Acts 22, and we're going to read a little bit right there. Acts 22 and verse 3. And this is Paul's words. It says, I am indeed a Jew born in Tarsus of Sicily, but brought up in the city at the feet of Gamaliel, taught according to the strictness of our father's law, and was zealous towards God as you are all today. So this city of Tarsus is a city on the northern coast of the Mediterranean, and it's what is in today would be Turkey, and it was a city of about 100,000 people at that time, and it was a city mostly of Greeks, but there was a large Jewish contingent there, and apparently Paul and his family was part of those. The city was known as a center of culture and learning, and also trade, but primarily culture and learning. It was a place where people appreciated culture and learning. It was because Paul was born in Tarsus that he was a Roman citizen, and later on he used that citizenship. And you remember one time he appealed to Rome when he was being mistreated. It was because he was from Tarsus that he was known as a Hellenistic Jew. A Hellenistic Jew means one who understands the Greek language and also has more or less accepted the Greek culture. So that's why he is called a Hellenistic Jew. Let's read Acts 22, verse 3 once again. He says, I am a Jew born in Tarsus, but brought up in the city at the feet of Gamaliel. What does that mean, brought up at the feet of Gamaliel? Well, this single line here tells us a couple of things. Well, first of all, let's find out, who is Gamaliel? And I'll explain later what it means to be brought up at the feet of a person. Gamaliel's first real name is Rabban, I guess you say Rabban or Rabban, Gamaliel the Elder. And you ask, why do I call him Rabban or Rabban? That's because he was a rabbi, but not just any rabbi. That the Rabban was a position above a rabbi. He was a special rabbi. And he was so special that some people referred to him as the elder. They didn't have to say his name or Rabban. They just said the elder, and they knew who you're speaking of. You were speaking of Gamaliel. And it just happens that he is the first Jew ever called a rabbin rather than a rabbi. And there are only seven rabbins in the history of the Jews, only seven. Even to this day, no one is called a rabbin or rabban. I should have looked at how to pronounce that, but since rabbi is pronounced that way, it's probably rabbin. So that puts him in kind of a special class, one of seven. Some history books say he was one of six. And, you know, like most Jewish things, you can't get to the bottom of it because people disagree on it. But we'll say he's one of seven, and he was the first of seven. And he just happened to be, at this point in time, the president of the Sanhedrin. And as you probably know, the Sanhedrin was sort of the Supreme Court of the Jewish belief. So he was a busy gentleman, for sure. He was president of the Sanhedrin, and he served with the Sanhedrin and made decisions and so on. So he was a busy gentleman. Also, Gamaliel is from a famous family, and you might not know that he's a grandson of Hillel the First. And you might say, well, who's Hillel the First? Hillel the First was the one who came up with a school of theology for the Jewish faith. There was two schools. One was the school of Hillel and the school of Shammai. And the two schools were slightly different. The school of Shammai was very strict, very unchanging, and they would not bend anything. Everything was right to the letter of the law. The school of Hillel was a little more lenient, and they tended to change with the times. You know, if the times changed, they figured out, well, this Jewish law just can't be really kept, then they would bend a little. Some people say they were more liberal. That's kind of an error to say they were more liberal. They were more reasonable, is a better word, maybe. But the school of Shammai was very strict. But the point I wanted to make is Gamaliel was a very, what would you say, had a good pedigree because he was related to Hillel. So all of this makes you ask, how in the world did Paul, how was he able to sit at the feet of Gamaliel and learn what he was to learn? How did he do that? We don't know. And I can't tell you, but I can theorize and kind of put the dots together. So I guess now I need to tell you what it means to sit at the feet of someone. In Jewish culture, when a Jewish boy became 5 or 6 years old, one thing was expected of him is that he would start to memorize the Torah, the first 5 books of the Hebrew Bible. Not only learn them, memorize them. And that, can you imagine memorizing the 5 books of the Old Testament, word for word? And let me show you, this is a little thing I made to show you. If they had codexes at that time, they did it at some point, a page would look like this. All Hebrew letters, no spaces, the words were jammed together, no spaces, no question marks, no periods, no commas, nothing. Just characters. Of course, I just printed all X's. But that's what he had to learn from. And how many words do you suppose are in the Torah? 80,000. Actually, 79,980, according to one source, give or take a few. And that's a daunting task. Now, did every Jewish boy do this? No, they did not. They were not capable of doing this. You know, they're like anybody else. Some people can do such things and other people can't. But apparently, Paul, whose name was actually Saul, was able to do that. And we can theorize that that's one of the reasons that Gamaliel was willing to take on Paul, because he was brilliant. I mean, let's face it, if you could memorize that much material, word for word, that takes a person of some brilliance. So that was a difficult thing to do. Now notice also, let me read again at part of Acts 22, verse 3. It says, he was brought up in the city at the feet of Gamaliel. What city is he talking about? He's talking about Jerusalem, because that's where he was when he wrote this, and that was where Gamaliel worked from, Jerusalem. So what does that mean? That means at some point in time, Paul, probably as a young boy, moved from Tarsus to Jerusalem. And it was there he sat at the feet of Gamaliel. So that's how he learned the Bible so well. And you recall scriptures which say he was perfect concerning the law. Without blame, he kept the law because he knew it so well. He had memorized it. Well, that's the first two characters I wanted to tell you about, the Apostle Paul and Gamaliel. Of course, they're so tied close together, it's almost like one person, because Gamaliel taught Paul virtually everything he needed to know about the Old Testament and about the Jewish faith. Of course, later on, Paul said, I consider that all as, I forget the word he used, I use the word rubbish. He says, I consider that all as rubbish for the sake of Christ. So now I want to tell you about the third character. And before I tell you about this third character, whose name I don't think you know, but you might. You might, some of you might know this name. I'm going to read you a verse out of a poem written by this gentleman, and here's what it says. They fashioned a tomb for thee, O holy and high one, in other words, God. The Cretans, always liars, evil beasts, idle bellies, but you are not dead, God, you're not dead. You live, thou livest and abidest forever, for in thee we live and move and have our being. Now you might recognize a couple of those lines in that verse, because Paul used them in his writings. And so who wrote this? Well, the gentleman who wrote this, his name is Epimenides, Epimenides, Epimenides. Of course, you don't need to remember his name, but what does this show? That shows this Paul was well-versed in the culture, in the Greek culture, because he knew about this poem that Epimenides wrote. And I'll tell you a little more about Epimenides a little later. Let's turn to Titus, the first chapter, and read a few verses there. Titus 1, beginning in verse 4. And verse 1 through 3 is the introduction. And then in verse 4, he says, to Titus, a true son of my common faith. And some people have misunderstood that Titus was actually his son. He wasn't his son. He was his son in the faith. Grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and our Lord Jesus Christ. For this reason, I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. And I don't know if you know where Crete is. Crete is an island in the northern Mediterranean, it would be in the western, northwestern part of the Mediterranean. But anyway, Titus is going to have to stay there in Crete, and I'll tell you a little bit about Crete, and that's kind of a tough job that Titus has to do. And he says, if a man, Paul goes on to write, if a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination, these are the qualifications of an elder, but you get right down to it, it's the qualification of all of us, not just elders. For a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, quick-tempered, given to wine, not violent, greedy for money. Verse 8, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, and controlled, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convict those who contradict. For there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision. So now Paul is telling Titus what the conditions was there in Crete. And he says, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not for the sake of dishonest gain. One of them, a prophet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars. So here's the line. Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. Now here, the next verse throws the commentators into a little bit of a tizzy. Because the next verse says, this testimony is true. Really? Therefore, rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in the faith, not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men who turn from the truth. So what did Paul mean in verse 13? This testimony is true. One commentator that I read, it says, well, if it's true, it said, if it's in the Bible and Paul said it's true, it's true. And so is it true that Christians are always liars? Well, that's kind of a broad brush, isn't it? But there's a semblance of truth there that I'll tell you about. But anyway, what did Paul mean? This testimony is true. He's telling you that, yes, this poet or prophet, he calls him, he did actually write that. He wrote that Christians are always liars and evil beasts and lazy gluttons. Let's see how I can explain this. First of all, let's look at the last two things he said. Evil beasts. Cretan was a small island. It's very small. It's about 160 miles long, and at the widest place, it's 37 miles, and it goes down to a very narrow 7 miles or so. And the people that populated that island were not very good people. They were pirates, bandits, highwaymen, thieves, pirates. They were all kinds of evil people. And apparently what this poet meant, they were evil beasts. They were so evil, they were hardly human. They were kind of like beasts. They were so evil. And this says lazy gluttons. What does that mean? That means they didn't want to hold a regular job. They wanted to be thieves and pirates and highwaymen and such things. And so those last two things are fairly true. But why did he say Cretans are always liars? Well, that's a long story, and it's so mixed up from my sources, I couldn't really give you an accurate description. But one thing the Cretans always said, and especially Epimenides said this, that the god Zeus was born on the Isle of Crete, and this god Zeus died on the Isle of Crete. Now other people tell a different story, but it all had to do with Zeus. And in one story, they said Zeus was born in a cave there, and it was just all mixed up. So this poet Epimenides was indicating that the Cretans were kind of proud of that story, that Zeus lived on Crete. And they didn't believe that he died, but they believed that Zeus was born on Crete. And of course, you and I know there's no such thing as Zeus. That's just a myth, a mythical god made up by the Greeks. So you can say, in a sense, it is true that all Christians are liars if they hold on to this weird idea that Zeus was born on their island. And the Cretans like to hang on to that idea. Well, I wanted to ask a question. How many of you have heard of Epimenides before? Okay, we have three, yes. How many of you have heard of Epimenides' paradox? How many of you heard of Liar's Paradox? Well, it's the same thing. Here's the paradox. Epimenides was a Cretan, and he said, Cretans are always liars. So if was he telling the truth or was he lying? That's the paradox. But anyway, why did Paul want to write this to Titus? Obviously, he wanted Titus to know the situation that they had there in Crete, that was a bad, bad situation. Because, as I said earlier, Crete was sort of a hangout of all kinds of thugs and pirates and people who didn't want to work for a living. They wanted to steal from other people. That's the kind of people that live there. Now, today, Crete is not like that at all. Crete is a kind of a nice place, and it's a tourist place today. And they have agriculture and so on. It's a kind of a nice place today. Epimenides isn't there. Epimenides, by the way, lived in 600 BC or so. So that shows you that his work was sort of considered a classic, and that's why Paul apparently knew of it. Okay, I'm coming to the end here. So what have we learned today? One of the things we have learned, the Apostle Paul was very likely the most capable author of the New Testament, almost without a doubt. No one had the education that he did, with the exception possibly of Luke, who was a physician, but I don't think Luke was trained as thoroughly as Paul was, especially not in the Jewish faith or the Old Testament. Paul actually understood the Old Testament better than almost any writer of the New Testament, without a doubt. And that's why people, most ministers, when they read Hebrews, they say, the writer of Hebrews says such and such, and we think it's Paul. And actually, I'm convinced it was Paul. Number two, the wisdom of God is shown in selecting the most knowledgeable men on earth to reveal his plan. And if you and I were to select someone to write the New Testament, would we choose Paul? We'd probably choose Paul. Isn't he the one that persecuted the church? Isn't he the one that supervised when Stephen was stoned? Why would you choose him? Well, God obviously recognized the ability of Paul. And as we can see, it was a great choice, because the zeal that Paul had in persecuting the church, God turned that in a zeal for the truth. And where would we be without the writings of Paul? So we know that the third point I want to point out, that Paul's sin was forgiven of, persecuting the church, and it was a heinous sin, but God forgave him for that and used him in a powerful way to bring us the Word of God. Actually, Paul used a couple of more quotations from Greek writers, but I don't want to, I don't have time, or don't want to go into those. But there's little doubt that Paul was a genius, and that God was very wise in choosing him to write. He himself wrote about 23-24% of the New Testament, and Luke wrote about 25%. So those two gentlemen were, God chose in a very wise way.